All right, we are in GC World.
Yep.
With Moni.
Moni. Yeah.
And last time we talked, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, the work you had done with sort of background GC.
For Warm Station.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you've been very busy, of course, writing native code. You're a C++ developer. What have you been working on?
So in 4.5, we introduced background GC for server.
Okay.
That's really something we wanted to accomplish because workstation for background workstation GC was kind of a stepping stone to that.
Okay.
Because, you know, servers where you have giant heaps where people, today I see people having, you know, not uncommon from 10 gigs to 30 gigs heaps.
Wow.
So, and server environment usually is a lot more stressful, right?
Okay.
It's on like a desktop application, which could be very stressful, but in server it's kind of, you need to handle requests as fast as possible. It's just, you know, you need to be very robust, very scalable, and basically everything has to be up a notch with server GC. Right?
Absolutely.
So when we did the background GC for workstation, that was really just, you know, we were on the way to making background GC for server work.
Excellent.
And in 4.5, we did that.
Great.
Yeah.
Right on. That's great news.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think clearly what this could mean for sure would be, say, you know, heap-intensive applications, like, I don't know, Channel 9, for example. This should make us faster, or
so,
what does this accomplish?
So it would give you shorter pauses.
Great.
Yeah. There's still, you can still see long pauses if we have to do a blocking for GC, which means stop the world, right? We have to suspend user threads. But hopefully, with the, you know, a lot of scenarios that we have, you can kind of sustain in just doing background Gen 2 GCs for a long period of time.
Okay.
And in some cases where we observed with the customer scenarios, they have a period of time where they have to be very latency conscious.
Okay.
For example, finance world, right? They market hours, they have to be really, they cannot tolerate long pauses. Mm. But, you know, outside of those, you know, what, 7.5 hours or so, they can do a full block in GC. So, you know, that this is perfect for them because, you know, they can just sustain for however long, you know, during the market hours with just doing the background for GCs. Mm. But, you know, outside of that, they can do a block in GC. They can, you know, get a fresh allocation budget for Gen 2 and they can start fresh.
Nice.
At the beginning of the day.
Great.
And we tested this on a couple of internal server apps, and we observed that long pauses went from on the order of seconds, you know, 1.5 to like 3 seconds to a few hundred milliseconds. So that's really cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So from a technical standpoint, since you're implementing this, what sort of strategies did you take? I mean, in some sense, you said that the workstation was a stepping stone because clearly you have less of a workload.
Yes.
As you had talked about.
Right.
In some sense, in less cores.
Less stressful.
Less stressful, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the magic that
you did. So from the technical standpoint of view, we have, you know, as you know, server GC has multiple heaps, right? So it's, you know, normally when we collect in server mode, we collect in parallel on multiple GC threads, whereas workstation has one heap and one GC thread to collect when we need to do a background GC, right? So there exist scenarios that only would occur with server mode, but not workstation mode. And there's mechanisms that we used to use in server GC that either needed to be changed or improved to accommodate for using on the background server GC threads.
Okay.
So for background server GC, we also create multiple background GC threads. So in addition to the server background GC threads that we've always had with server GC, now you also have multiple dedicated GC threads to do the background GC work.
Okay.
And for example, right, let's talk about some examples that make this kind of challenging piece of work. We have this mechanism that we use to synchronize the server GC threads because during one server collection, we have work that we have to completely finish on every GC thread before we can proceed to the next phase. Right. So for that, we have a synchronization mechanism that we use. So, you know, everybody calls this when they're done with their part of the work. Then we wait until everybody is done with that work. Then we say, okay, now everybody can proceed. Then we repeat that a few times, right? But so we implemented something that's very robust and very performant solution for that. But with background server GC threads, we have a new scenario, which is you could be calling this synchronization mechanism different number of times on different threads, which did not exist with just a server collection, right? Login collection. So we have, you know, different design choices. We could either improve our, you know, old synchronization mechanism, so it could be called multiple, you know, like different times on multiple GC threads for background GC work. Or we could, you know, implement a whole new, you know, mechanism. Or so we decided on kind of using our existing suspension mechanism that we use for user threads and made background GC threads actually, you know, managed threads. They are sort of managed threads, but they're very different from normal managed threads, which are usually user threads, right?
Okay.
So because we did that, now we can use the normal suspension mechanism to suspend the background GC threads when they need to be, right? For example, you know, when you're doing a fork, what we call a foreground GC, those are the ephemeral GCs that happen during a background GC, right? So foreground GC would say, I want to suspend threads in order to do my work. So we actually just, you know, in that case, background GC threads actually just look sort of like normal user threads to the foreground GC guys. Mm. So we use that. Of course, that introduces new problems because there's operations that are kind of legal on the when GC does them, but not legal when normal user threads do them. So then we had to kind of order a bunch of places where, you know, we make decisions and say, like, what is legal, what is not legal. It also introduced new scenarios for just background GC alone, because we used a different mechanism before for background workstation GC. So there's places we know that, okay, at this part of the code, a GC cannot be triggered, right? A foreground GC cannot be triggered. But now, since we're using this different mechanism, there are actually places where a foreground GC can be triggered that couldn't be before. So then we had to, you know, handle those and... for example, like how we sweep the ephemeral generations at the after the mark phase for background GC. Mm. So, you know, like that phase, like where can we tolerate foreground GC, where we can't. So sure. Then we have to do some work to make that concurrent. there's other scenarios, for example, when we catch up, when we have this catch up phase where, you know, because we're doing a bunch of work concurrently, the user threads could be modifying the heap. So we need to recognize that, right?
Yes.
We do that with write watch. It's an OS service.
Okay.
So write watch would tell you, like, these are the pages that have been written to have been dirtied since last time you looked at them.
Okay.
Right. So before, when we had one heap and one GC thread doing the work, we, you know, didn't have a situation where, you know, we could be looking at an object, you know, when we're catching up, where the mark status for this object could be changed. Because we only have one thread, right?
Mm.
This thread either is doing the catching up work or is doing the marking work. It can't be doing both, right?
Sure.
But with server background GC, of course, that's no longer true. So while you're looking at some pages to catch up, you could have another server GC thread doing the marking work that could be marking the objects you're looking at.
Yes.
So you can't miss them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because with our old mechanism, we could be missing objects. So then we had to change that to say, like, oh, we have to handle this situation where there's concurrent marking going on while we're doing the catching up work.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, did you sort of do atomics? I mean,
that's another interesting challenge that we had. We had when we're concerned the marking. So, like, marking, you know, there's a mark bit, right? There's one mark bit for each object. So when you have only one GC thread, you just say, I want to set that bit,
mm-hmm.
right? But of course, if you have multiple GC threads that could be looking at the same byte, right?
Sure.
There's no operations that can atomically set one byte, one
mm-hmm.
bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then there's different design decisions to be made. For example, we consider, like, you know, we could do a per CPU mark data structure, right?
Mm.
So then when we're stopped at the end of the mark phase, we could merge them.
Okay.
So that way we don't need to interlock on the the MARC data structure. Or you could imagine a solution where you could kind of queue up objects that belong to a different heap, so you don't need to be looking at the same, you know, part of the MARC data structure. So there's, you know, various solutions, and
sure.
we have to choose one, and that's kind of the challenges that we faced when doing the server background GC work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excellent. And then that, you know, the power of the language that you're using lets you basically implement any performance solution that you can come up with.
Pretty much.
And you did.
Yeah, we do have, you know, kind of limitations from, for example, the OS, you know, write watch and how the virtual memory manager manipulates the, you know, pages and what log it takes, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So we try to cope with that and do as much concurrently as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, with the server environment, a lot of things are exaggerated, right? You know, a lot of things that we thought like, oh, this would be okay doing non-concurrently, right?
Mm-hmm.
For example, we do a little bit of, well, at least we consider it as a little bit of initialization work
mm-hmm.
at the beginning of background GC. You know, for example, we can copy the stack routes and all that. One of the pieces of work that we did, which never caused a problem for us latency-wise before, was that we need to reset the write watch on the pages that we will be looking at during the MARC phase.
Mm.
And that used to be done always non-concurrently as part of the initialization work.
Okay.
And then with server GC, I actually observed that could be one of the most significant pauses that a GC can introduce, because it just takes a really long time to actually go and reset the status on those, you know, pages.
Sure.
So, you know, then we had to make that part concurrent because we didn't want that part to be the bottleneck of the latency.
Mm.
And then it's not a simple matter of just like kind of moving that part outside of the non-concurrent, right? You have to consider like what to do about, you know, segments that you may allocate during this phase while you're resetting. Right, you know, are they considered out of range, in range? How do you catch up on those segments, that kind
wow.
of thing? And you, I observed this interesting thing with the reset write watch, which was you have to kind of give the user threads a chance to run, because a reset takes a global log per process, right? So if you're letting one thread take that log, then other threads, they couldn't really do much a
sure.
lot of the time. So, you know, what is the granularity that we can afford to do the reset on without introduce too much of a pause, you know, too much limitation for the user threads? Those are the things that we have to consider.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, new in 4.5, which is great news for server people.
Yes.
In terms of the heap management generally,
mm-hmm.
like beyond, I mean, clearly this is all interrelated, but
mm-hmm.
specifically kind of narrowing down in the large heap management
mm-hmm.
that's more efficient.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about that?
You mean beyond the server background GC?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
like,
so of course, one of the issues that people have been talking about was the large heap fragmentation, right?
Yes.
Large object heap fragmentation. And, I mean, because large object heap does not compact, as of now, we still don't compact large object heap.
Mm.
In theory, obviously, fragmentation could be an issue, right? Because if you go on for too long without compacting, you will introduce a lot of holes, right? But in reality, I have observed that people being able to work around this fairly easily in some cases. For example, I've helped a couple of teams at Microsoft that just worked around this issue by doing a very, very simple, you know, buffer pool implementation,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of solved their problem, right?
Okay.
And I had been asking people for real-world scenarios where this is an issue for them, because, you know, in theory, I can always write a test that could cause problems for this, but I wanted to see, like, in real world, how this could cause people problems. It's actually pretty rare that I actually could get a real-world repro.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, I mean, even doing a buffer pool implementation, that's work for
sure.
people, right? So obviously, we want to make the, you know, memory manager as convenient for people as possible. So we wanted to work on this issue, and 4.5 was a good time for that.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we changed how we fit objects in the free spaces on the large object heap. So before, we had this mechanism where we just do a first fit, which means, you know, you look at a free item on the LO ledge, and you say, like, could this fit the allocation request that the user thread is asking for or not.
Okay.
If it can, great, we'll just allocate it in there. If not, then we'll discard this and move on to the next three items. And because, you know, large object heap is only collected with Gen 2 GCs, the fresh free list is only built up during the next 4 GC, right? Which could be not often at all in a lot of the scenarios, because we don't want to do 4 GCs often, right?
Okay.
And that kind of caused a problem, because, you know, you consume the free list away and you don't build a fresh one until probably a long time from now, which means you'd have to increase the heap size by, you know, allocating a new segment. And so, you know, you could kind of observe, you know, the large object heap having a lot of free space on it.
Okay.
So in 4.5, we changed the way that we utilize the free list on the large object heap. And we actually keep different buckets of sizes, and then we don't discard the ones that we couldn't use.
Mm.
So basically, we go to a bucket that could fit our size, and we get an item from there, and then we give that out to satisfy the allocation request. And if there's leftover, we would, you know, rebucket that into our existing free list. So we use it a lot more efficiently. And we observed really great improvements with some of our tests that use the allocate large object heap, large objects a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, like, the effect is kind of exaggerated there too, because that's the sole purpose of those tests, right? Hopefully that's not what you do in the real world.
Sure.
Scenario, but nonetheless, you know, that is the effect that you would see with the new allocator mechanism.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, one of the questions I would have, in terms of as we make this march towards the cloud,
mm-hmm.
and distributed computing,
mm-hmm.
you know, do you guys work on thinking about, you know, garbage collecting over a distributed heap? Does that make any sense at all?
So as of now, we don't, but
sure.
I'm not saying, like, you know, in the future we wouldn't,
sure.
right?
Sure.
I think we still have a ways to go just on kind of a local process scope. For example, like, as I mentioned, that, you know, if today you still have to do a full block in GC, you may still suffer from a long pause, right? If you have a 25 gig heap, right? So our next task is kind of making that part work, and so, you know, you hopefully will never experience, you know, a very long pause anymore.
Sure.
And then I think the next step could be that we actually have some sort of governor process that we can watch over the whole machine.
Mm.
So yeah, you have multiple processes, right? I mean, today there's already some GCs that do that,
mm-hmm.
because their environment also kind of dictates that.
Mm-hmm.
But for, you know, for our scenario today, you know, sometimes people already suffer from the case where if you run into a very, very high memory load situation, then, you know, people would get the notification from the OS. Then
mm-hmm.
everybody starts doing stuff to try to clean up. And that's already kind of a problem.
Sure.
So, you know, for us, that could be something that we try to do better at.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, you could imagine then we go beyond that,
mm-hmm.
like you said, you know, a distributed environment,
mm-hmm.
where you could even watch over how processes on different boxes, they collaborate with each other and do a better job there.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Sort of a, like a GC cloud service.
Yeah.
Which would be interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we move, you know, we're moving into the parallel world,
mm-hmm.
the concurrent world. We keep
mm-hmm.
talking about this. We've been talking about it for like 5 or 6 years now.
Right.
I mean, there's going to be times where, you know, you're going to have a user application
mm-hmm.
that's going to take advantage of, you know, 20 cores.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the
yeah.
server environment, lots more.
Yeah, 128 cores.
Yes.
It's not unimaginable. Yeah.
And you're going to have to ensure that you don't, you know, they're doing 128 things simultaneously, or
mm-hmm.
even more than that,
mm-hmm.
that you don't get in the way and mark things incorrectly because something wasn't
exactly.
done on this end. I mean,
right.
it's a serious challenge.
Yeah, so we also are thinking about that. You know, if you have many, many cores on the box, which, you know, today is not exactly that, you know, high on our priority list,
sure.
just because other factors too, right? You know,
yeah.
many applications, they don't even work well when you have many cores, right? They're not
yeah.
enlightened beyond 64 cores.
Yeah.
But if we are in the situation where we do have many cores. We're thinking of, you know, kind of doing the GC work just in the background continuously, maybe just using a few cores just for the GC work. You know, especially if the user tells us, like, you know, if I have 128 cores, I'm willing to dedicate, you know, 2 or 4 cores to just GC work. Mm-hmm. We could just be doing GC work all the time while, you know, letting the user threads use the heap at
sure.
the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be really concurrent.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's also something that we're thinking about.
Cool. And the last random question I'll throw at you is the C++ 11 memory model.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm sure you're a C++ dev, yeah. and you have been for many, many years.
Yeah.
They're moving towards this world with like standard atomic and mm-hmm. and where you can be sequentially consistent or mm-hmm. inconsistent mm-hmm. depending upon how crazy and how much control you mm-hmm. want to have.
Yeah.
But do you look at like the movement of the language and stuff.
Oh yeah,
and,
we
like,
do.
Think
we
about how you're gonna
look at the movement of the language and just instruction sets. Like, we could, you know, you could imagine us working with hardware vendors to say, like, could you provide us with this new instruction that could do, you know, either, you know, perhaps loading with this sort of flag or, you know,
sure.
that kind of special thing to help with the GC work. That's
yeah.
definitely something that we can. I mean, you can, you know, like a lot of. Languages like, you know, those may have actually hardware instructions to do the GC work, right? So
sure.
it's certainly something that we want to look into and want to talk to our partners about in the hardware
sure.
world. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And of course you have, you know, Herb Sutter right around the corner.
yeah.
Building 41, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like for some of the standard stuff for the language. But that's really cool. You're using Visual Studio and WinDebug? WinDBG?
Yeah, WinDBG. Yeah.
Is your debugger?
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
And she's coding C++ all day, every day?
Yep.
How about some C? Do you throw some C in there?
Actually, you know, RGC code with little modification, it could just be compiled in C.
Yeah?
We don't use
you don't
fancy
use...
C++ features. Yeah. Most of my code is just doing computation, right? It's those plus those should be assigned to those. I mean, from the language point of view, it's actually very simple.
Sure.
It's just the stuff that it does is, you know, it needs to be very robust and
sure.
reliable and, you know, performant. That's
super
that's
fast.
Kind of the basically, you know, robustness, not crash, obviously,
mm-hmm.
right? You know,
mm-hmm.
we can't afford to crash. And performance are the two things I care about the most.
Excellent. So yeah. let's talk a little bit about not crashing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you... I mean, that's a hard problem to solve.
It is.
Typically.
Yeah. yeah.
So your algorithms, obviously, as you said, are going to be very tight,
mm-hmm.
Well-tested, well-thought-out,
mm-hmm.
fairly well-executed.
Mm-hmm.
But there are going to be times when something bad happens,
mm-hmm.
out-of-memory exception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you deal with the pressure of the environment?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of your algorithms themselves throwing exceptions or whatever, I'm sure
right.
clearly you're not using exceptions anyway. But talk to me
mm-hmm.
about how that works.
Right, so in 4.0, I actually added an SOS command called analyze out of memory.
Okay.
So that tells you, you know, after you get out of memory exception, you can just type, you know, ban AO, you know, which is short form for analyze OOM.
Okay.
And tells you why you're getting out of memory. For example, you know, it's because, you know, GC number, you know, 23675, we failed to commit memory. Because we needed to commit this many bytes and we couldn't find enough physical storage to commit that.
Okay.
So you get out of memory. Or like, you know, we failed to reserve. But I'm hoping to make that part more usable for users. Because, you know, you could, like, now you're one step closer to what you're looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can say, like, okay, I know I'm out of memory because we failed to commit, right? And we were trying to allocate this large object, for example, and that's when we failed to commit. So you could sort of say, like, you know, was this allocation necessary or what, right?
Mm-hmm.
But often, as you know, the allocation request that caused the out of memory is, you know, not necessarily the guy at fault, right?
Sure.
It could just be you've been allocating, or even the library that you're using, you know, perhaps in the way that you're using it, it allocated a bunch of objects that you may not even be aware of, right? So we definitely want to kind of increase the tools coverage and help people find problems like this on their own.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of performance side of the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
out of memory, you know, you're using too much memory, then there's just the if you just get a crash.
Yeah.
So because, you know, of an AV, right? Mm-hmm. In most of the cases, because, you know, we try very, very hard to not have GC do the wrong thing, right? Because that's something we really just can't afford to have.
Sure.
So when a product is released, when you observe an AV from a GC call stack, which is normally you would see, like, you know, in the mark phase and whatnot, you see an AV, most of the cases is not because of GC. Mm. It's because of a GC hole. For example, you're using unmanaged code, you know, you're p-invoking, you perhaps you did the wrong signature and or whatever reason that made the p-invoke call incorrect. Mm. Then you, when GC actually sees the object next time, it needs to look at the heap, it finds out that the heap is now corrupted.
Aye.
Right. So, like, in 4.0, we also added diagnostic tools to help with that. We had a new COMPLUS flag that you can turn on that does very, very lightweight verification. Because the challenge there is that, you know, a lot of these issues, they just simply don't repro anymore if you put on too much instrumentation. That's kind of the problem I have when I need to diagnose, you know, AVs are caused by GC, right?
Mm-hmm.
I usually have to do, kind of iterate a few times in the instrumentation code that I add. Because, you know, as soon as you add too much instrumentation, you never see the repro anymore. You know,
sure.
Normally it already takes, like, hours to repro, so
sure.
You don't want to, you know, make that much longer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's also something that we're trying to do, basically to either help our customers' life, you know, help them be able to diagnose something on their own, or we help our folks that need to do the diagnostic work.
Sure.
With, you know, by making better tools.
Great.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are some of the sort of canonical examples that your customers,
mm-hmm.
your problems that people have?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's really what my question is. So,
mm-hmm.
like, what are some of the biggest problems that you see out in the real world?
Out in the world, I think I also was talking to a bunch of support folks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, since they deal with customers every day, you know, real world customers.
Absolutely.
Every day. So it appears that analyzing heap usage is really the biggest problem.
Okay.
So, you know, like you said, you know, what to do when you get an out of memory, right? That's where people, they really need help with, you know, tools and whatever technology that we can provide to help them with analyzing, like, why did I come to this point where I'm using so much memory?
Yes.
So the thing that I think we're kind of lacking there is we don't really provide enough production environment tools.
Mm.
So very often, especially for server folks, you know, they have this big server running in production, right? And of course, people, they try to do a good job on their own. You know, they try to have an, you know, in-house testing environment.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's just not very easy to mimic what happens on the production server. Right, they may have problems just like we have here. Like, you know, you could do a bunch of recording and whatnot, but maybe that would just change the behavior so much on the server that it's no longer valid for you to mimic. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've actually heard this as a pretty common thing that, you know, it's a something that people are troubled with. Like, you know, they can't really replicate something in their test environment that they see on their production environment.
Mm.
So I think one of the things that we really need to focus on, you know, we need to provide them with very lightweight instrumentation that
yes.
they can use, they can turn on, and then just see, like, where the problem kind of creeps up that would, you know, make them either use more and more memory or have other sort of memory issues that eventually would cause problems, right?
Sure.
So hopefully that they can monitor that, and then they can, you know, they may need to do some analysis or debugging on their side,
mm-hmm.
but then they have more data to go on, right? Whereas today, you know, even taking a memory dump takes a long time when you're already at the out-of-memory point. And
sure.
it's often too late, right? You don't really know what happened. So, you know, thinking about what to do even in the runtime to help with analyzing problems that you see in the production environment, that's something that I'm hoping to do, you know, especially soon in the next release or so. But
great.
Yeah.
So the GC will be able
yeah.
to detect memory leaks and,
yeah,
and plug them automatically.
Yeah. So, this is definitely something I think is very useful to do.
Of course.
Because, we want to, you know, put more tools in the customer's hands,
mm-hmm.
so they can work, you know, on their own and be able to find problems on their own.
Amen. I mean, of course, the hard thing I would imagine from your perspective, being the GC, is to really kind of know what a leak is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, is this really leaking memory, or does this app really want to allocate
all
this stuff?
Exactly. Yeah. That's actually one of our biggest complaints from the field. It's very hard to figure out what is leaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Totally. It's like the Windows that turns white on your desktop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Operating system doesn't know. I mean, it's like, hey, you're not sending signals anymore. My assumption has to be it's locked.
Right.
But maybe that's not the case. Maybe the app was written in a poor way so that the large computation blocks the UI thread.
Exactly.
You can't use it and blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, today you have some tools that would help with it, right? You know, there's SOS, which is my favorite tool to use, you know, for diagnosing heap problems.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can imagine it's not, perhaps not convenient enough for people to use when they are on a live production server.
Sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's great to come and see you again.
Yeah,
great. It seems like you've
been
really busy.
Yeah.
Rock on.
To do. Yeah.
Right on. And, you know, it's good that you're working with native code. I mean, I can't imagine why you would use anything else. But rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you in a couple of years.
Yep.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cheers.